welcome back to the Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. JJ Padishaw, what's up, man?
What's going on, Steve? Good to see you. Great. Always great to be here.
It's great to see you. Happy Monday. JJ's been a regular working with Clearwater Jazz Holiday Education and Outreach, and he's back with the Young Lions program today with a session that he's calling Building a Chord Vocabulary. And we're really looking forward to that. And so thanks for joining. After these live sessions, the recordings get put in the studio resource at clearwaterjazz.com in the education and outreach section. And that's brought to you by our partners, Duke Energy and Blue Water Wealth Management at Steward Partners. You could also listen to these sessions after the fact on our podcast, Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions Podcast, available wherever you stream. That's brought to you by Marine Max Clearwater. And if you'd like us to consider a specific topic, please don't hesitate to email us at info@clearwaterjazz.com and we'll see what we can do. JJ is an active participating educator in the Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions program. He also delivers guitar lessons as part of Clearwater Jazz Holiday Education and Outreach with our Build a Guitar partnership in connection with Palm Harbor Bass Company Best Corporate Events. The program donates guitars to neighborhood family centers in underserved communities, and then we deliver guitar lessons throughout the year. Very fortunate to have JJ participating in that program. He's also active with our Young Lions program. He grew up with music all around him. His sound and knowledge are reflective of a diverse range of influences. To learn more about JJ, please visit jjpadishawmusic.com. JJ, welcome back to Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. The stage is all yours.
Steve, thank you for that awesome introduction. It's always a pleasure once again to be here with Clearwater Jazz Holiday. You all do some great work out in the community, and I feel just super fortunate to be a part of that. This has been a real exciting season, kind of getting back, just kind of reconnecting with you guys. And we're really working with some great kids out in the community. I've been just really excited and really inspired by what we're seeing. And this is just a great resource. And, you know, over the course last week, in our last session, I kind of set the tone for essentially the next several weeks with some of you who may be new to jazz guitar. And it's really all about laying a foundation. And especially this is kind of being gearing this towards those of you students, whether both high school and middle school students, and then some of those of you who maybe you're in a community jazz band as well. I hope that maybe you'll find some of this information useful. And those of you who have been playing a while, maybe it'll just give you another approach, because there's always so much to learn from those around us. So last week, in the last session, we were talking about kind of really getting started. We talked about the blues. I mean, all of this, we're going to always kind of be circling back around and covering some of kind of reviewing material that we've spent some time with, because there are kind of central ideas and themes that are just kind of run throughout jazz, throughout the entire history of jazz, from its earliest days to contemporary styles and contemporary players. Today, what I want to do is start with building a chord vocabulary and kind of give you an idea of what that means. I'm also in the process of putting a series of PDFs together for the Clearwater Jazz Holiday for these sessions that you'll be able to download when these lessons are up and ready for download as well. So today, we're going to talk about building a chord vocabulary. And what does that mean? Well, in jazz, probably one of the most, I think, for me, from my own experience, one of the first things that that I experienced in approaching this music, especially when I was in middle and high school, was essentially encountering chords and concepts that I had never been exposed to before. Especially if you're fortunate to have a solid jazz community, or community of musicians in your area, then by all means, I would do my best, do whatever you can, find the teachers, tap into those resources. We have, if you're here in the area, we've got some extremely talented players. But that said, if you don't, if it's all completely new to you, it can be daunting sometimes. You start seeing these chords with strange names like a D minor 9 or a G7 sharp 11 or a flat. You start seeing what's a flat 9, what's a flat 5, what's a flat 13, what's a major 6. So that can be. I'm gonna let you know first of all what that means for and. And I'm going to give you a handful of chords that you're more likely than not going to encounter right off the bat. And we're going to use a tune after a little bit. We'll do a little listening. We're going to do Duke Ellington's Take the A Train. And it's not necessarily, it's not that I say it's like an intermediate tune, but the cool thing is that structurally it's pretty straightforward. There aren't like a million chords. And it moves at a tempo that is easy enough as a guitar player, right? When you're kind of just building your chord vocabulary, we're not really so much concerned with the melody as much as we are just kind of navigating the tune. We'll talk more to this is kind of will lead us into talking about song form. We talked a little bit about that when we discussed the blues as a foundation. But this will, I think Take the A Train is nice because it's still a relatively concise piece, and there aren't like a million chords like as if you're jumping into a Charlie Parker tune. So it's a good place to start. Duke's tunes are tried and true, have stood the test of time, and so many people have arranged and rearranged his tunes, and they're just as relevant today as they have ever been. So right off the bat, I've pulled this chart here, this Take the A Train. I've pulled this from the iReal book. A lot of students are familiar with that. It's a great app. It's a great resource. There are a lot of mixed feelings about real books. The chords that you encounter may or may not be true at times to the actual chords that the artist originally used in the tune, because a lot of these, just like social media and a lot of the apps that we use today, they're community-based, so which is great. But sometimes people take some liberties with the harmony and just the overall arranging of the songs. But this is pretty straightforward, and I'm going to give you just this is really just we're using it as a guide point. So we're going to start with Take the A Train, and maybe the first thing to do is for those of you, let's get it in your head, and then we're going to talk about jumping and right in and looking at some chords. So here's the original. This is the classic Duke Ellington recording. All right, so there are many, we're not going to listen to the whole thing at the moment. We'll come back to it. But for the moment, I just wanted to kind of help you find that. There's plenty of recordings of this on YouTube that you can find. If you have Spotify or any of the Apple Music, you'll probably find a number of recordings by Duke and by other artists. I want to show you now too, kind of a way to rearrange it. We're guitar players, right? So it's like, all right, that's great. That's a great classic tune, but we're kind of some of as guitar players, especially if we've come from rock or funk backgrounds, from blues, sometimes we want something that we can kind of latch on to. So this George Benson arrangement, this is another way we can think about arranging. We'll talk more about that down the road. But here is George Benson reimagining it. Same chords, same general structure, a little different feel, but this is kind of a nice way to, again, we're trying to find inroads to jazz when it's new. So let's just listen to this for a moment. Already you can hear, right? It's got like, this is probably like late 70s on the Creed Taylor records. Different feel, right? It's always funky because of George Benson.
Right.
He's bad. He's feeling the melody a little different. I like the train in the background. All right, so let's pause there for a moment. This is just giving us a reference point now. All right, so now we can go back to the stop share. Let's go back to the chart. Okay, so as far as this chart is concerned now, so we jump right in here. You're gonna see chords like C6. I'm gonna just use my pointer here. We come into a D7 sharp 11, right? These are chords that we haven't seen before. We've got these strange symbols, right? Like, what is this? I've got a -7, you know, or G7. Okay, so let's kind of walk through all of that. And when we're talking about, you're already with jazz, we're gonna be dealing especially with upper extensions of chords. I'm going to click out of this for a moment. We'll kind of be coming back and forth of this. What does that mean? So when you start, we're not going to get real heavy into the theory today because we'll spend more time with that down the road, but at least some general understanding of what's going on. In jazz, the beauty of it, right, we will work, you know, when we work with coming from pop and rock backgrounds, right, more often than not, we're dealing with specific triads. Triads meaning, right, 1, 3, 5 of the chord. If it's a major third, if it's a major triad, it's 1, you got the major third and then the 5. If it's a minor, right, you've got the minor third, the flat third in the middle there. Well, when we're dealing with jazz, we start kind of building on top of that. We still have that, but now we're gonna add things like the major 7 on top. Maybe you're going to have a minor 7. Jazz, we might have a dominant 7. We talked about this a little bit when we were discussing the blues. With a dominant 7, it's a major triad with a flat 7 on top. And these shapes will be in the PDF that I'm creating for you too. And I'll get up close to the camera in just a moment, but right now we're just getting the sounds. Jazz allows us to really expand on the harmony, and it allows us to get into some really lush, some really interesting colors. So instead of now playing a traditional major chord, I can experiment with the harmony. Maybe I have sounds like this now. Instead of a dominant, like a traditional dominant 7, now I'm putting the 13 on top. So in jazz, more often than not, and then that also plays into our improvisation, that when we improvise, you know, whereas in, we're coming again from that more traditional, maybe a rock or a pop background, where we're dealing a lot with major pentatonics, minor pentatonics, right? Blues scales. That's also gonna apply here, but now we're expanding in that when we start to improvise down the road, we start to take in these deeper harmonies. We start to kind of consider that and trying to really play around those chords. So let's just start. We're gonna start with, and we have some previous lessons that kind of tie into this, but we're gonna go a little further today. We're going to talk about 4 main chords, and I'm going to give you some shapes, because what you need to do, this next series of lessons is really just about covering the part and how that translates between different tunes, right? You don't necessarily have to understand all of the theory right up front to play the chords. When you're in a jazz ensemble at your school or wherever you are, in the beginning, it's more important to me that you can at least cover the part and hang with the band, right? Use your ears to listen to what's going on. work with your instructors, work with your band directors to really know what's needed. And they will help you to understand kind of theoretically and harmonically what's going on. But it's more important to me, I want somebody that can cover the part. So in this case, kind of your four sounds that you're gonna be dealing with, just like in the beginning, right? You've got majors, minors, dominants, and then we're also gonna do something called a minor 7 flat 5 or a half diminished chord, which you'll hear, it kind of sounds like this. So the minor 7 flat 5 is this, goes to the dominant into a minor. So let's start with a major 7. Major 7, all I'm doing here, what you want to do, we talked about this in a previous lesson where I said you want to understand kind of navigating the guitar, the root system, like on the, especially on the 6th and the 5th string. You can go back, that those lessons are on the website, where you can learn basically about navigating the 6th and the 5th string, because in the early stages of playing, a lot of your roots, right, the tonic of the chords are going to be either on the 5th, the 6th string, or the 5th string here, which is the A string, right? So once you've got that, a lot of this information translates between tunes. So let's go back to my screen share here. Let's pull up the Duke tune again. And so for instance, once I have a solid chord vocabulary, once I can at least cover, I usually say to my students, have at least 2 or 3 ways of playing each chord, okay? There are plenty of resources on YouTube. There are great chord books too, if you prefer that way. And then the other way is to learn some of this, besides what we're doing right now. Instructors are always awesome if you can find, if you have somebody in your community that can you can study with. But otherwise, you know, trading with friends, looking at what people are doing, get online. If you find something, if you like the way Wes Montgomery or George Benson is playing something, oh, that's, if you like the way something sounds, and you want to add that into your kind of arsenal of tunes, or excuse your arsenal of chords, then figure out what they're doing. See if you can find a chart, see if whatever it is. Sometimes there might be a YouTube video of somebody explaining exactly what they're doing. And if you like that, what that particular chord voicing, right? Because there are many ways to play a C major 7. So I can play it down here. But I can also play it up here. I can also play C major 7 like this, where I'm up at the 10th fret. We'll come back to those in just a moment. But the whole idea is that once you've got a few of those, there's a couple different ways of thinking about your chord vocabulary. One is just being as pragmatic about it as possible. So when I'm thinking, what that means is I want something that's relatively straightforward, relatively easy to play in the beginning, because I'm not so much thinking creatively as I am thinking practically. I've got a concert coming up and I need to be able to play this tune for the for this particular piece, or excuse me, I need to be able to play these chords for this tune. So first, that's where we start, right? The next thing is I think of like mobility. So for instance, you don't want to be necessarily in the beginning jumping all around the neck. So what I mean by that is, let's say, let's come out of the screen share for a second. So let's say we'll use this Duke Ellington tune, Take the A Train. And rather than if my, all right, so just the first two chords, I have a C major 7. And this chord I have gone over before, but we'll review it. It's basically just a bar on the 3rd fret. And then what I'm gonna do, got my second finger on the, I'm on the 3rd fret. I've got my second finger here on the fourth fret on the 3rd string. 4th finger is on the 4th string in the 5th fret. And then my 4th finger is on the 2nd string in that same fret. So that's what it looks like. So in this case, I'm going to use this form and then our dominant chords that we talked about last week, right? It's basically a C shape, but I'm going to move it up here to the fifth fret, and I'm going to add my fourth finger to the third string. The root is here. The root is here on the fifth string. So I've got a C major 7. And then the beauty of that is that's going to lead me right into my minor 7, to my dominant 7, and we'll come back to that in a second, in just a moment. Now, when I talk about mobility, all I'm saying is pick chords that are relatively close to each other. So for instance, I don't need to play C major 7 here and then jump all the way up here to play my D7. And then I'm not going to jump down here to play my D minor 7. And then I'll go here to play a G dominant 7. And then maybe I'll play my C major 7 here. Not in the beginning. I'm trying to keep everything concise. So watch this. I want to keep, when I talk about mobility, I just want to keep it all smooth transitions. I'm going to come up and I'll go over that, all those chords for you. But all I'm saying is trying to keep everything an ease of transition. Try to keep everything concise. So first things, just cover the part. You find chords that are relatively easy to play, you know, that are easy. The beauty of those kind of chords that have the root on the fifth and the sixth string is that they're movable. So once you learn a C major 7, now I can move it up a half step and it becomes a D flat major 7 or a C sharp major 7. Then I move it up a half step, it becomes a D major 7. All right, so as guitar players, we kind of have this advantage that once we learn one shape, we can transfer that all the way up and down the neck. Same thing goes for not all shapes, but especially these kind of primary chords that we're talking about, these primary shapes. If I play a D dominant 7 here, again, these are in an earlier lesson, I can move this all the way up so it becomes an A flat 7, A7. Be sure to check out those lessons that we have on these early chords, because once you have those, that's going to give you a solid foundation for just at least navigating the neck. And the third thing that we'll think about is later on, as you start to develop your sound, is that you want to think, now you can start thinking creatively, based off of, as you get deeper into the theory and the harmony of the song, and you understand, you know, what notes are going to work within the context of the song. Because sometimes you try a chord voicing, right? And it's not going to lay right, depending with, especially with the melody. The melody kind of determines, drives the song. But let's back up. So solid chords, first thing to think about when you're building your vocabulary, just find core chords. Your chords that are built on the fifth or the sixth string are a great place to start. Second is mobility. Okay, try to keep everything relatively close. Keep your transitions tight, so that you're not jumping all over the neck, because until you develop that coordination, you don't want some of these chord forms can be a little funky. You don't want that to slow you down. And then third is gonna be color and voicings, right? Now, as you develop as a player, you will start to choose the voicings based off of your own approach and kind of what you hear. And as long as it falls, that's the beauty of jazz, is that once you've got a solid foundation, and you kind of, as you start to get deeper into the music and understand these ideas, you have a lot of, even as a rhythm player, we have a lot, and playing, when we're playing the harmony, because that's what we do as guitar players primarily, you have a lot of liberty to get creative with the way you approach the harmony, with how you approach the rhythm, as long as you're listening to what the group is doing. Unless it's a written part that says this is the voicing, and that does happen periodically, but there is also, as an accompanist, there is a lot of freedom that we have, kind of improvising again within the realm of our harmony. And the cool thing about this is that fine players, I know I have players that I relate to, that I find, that I connect with based off of, sometimes it's feel. Sometimes, obviously, we like the way somebody takes a solo, because that's always what catches our ears, right? We watch somebody take a solo, and it's just amazing to watch. So that's kind of the flashy part. But there are people like Jim Hall, or listen to a Duke is another great one, right? When we talk about harmony, Antonio Carlos Jobim, Ja Gilberto, these are Brazilian artists. There are some great players, John Scofield. Listen to the way Bill Frisell, the way these guys, Camila Meza, think about how they, the way that they approach their chords, the way that they do that becomes just as much a part of their sound as the way that they play a lead line. And the cool thing is that as I start to figure out, as we start to listen to what they do, and we start picking little pieces here and there, a little bit of George Benson here, a little bit of Camila Meza here, a little bit of Bill Evans, he's another great one, doesn't all have to be guitar players. The way that they approach their harmony, when you start to range that onto the guitar, that becomes just as much a part of your sound, all right? Because that's ultimately, right, that's what we're doing as jazz musicians, is that we're trying to find our own voice amongst all of the voices, right? And you're trying to kind of develop your own sound. So that's down the road. And the beginning, let's back up one more time. And let's just talk about, okay, that's great, but I need to like cover, I need some practical information. I've got Take the A Train, you know, at the end of the year concert. What do I do? Okay, let's back up. I'm gonna just shift here a little bit. Let's talk about practicality. So the first way to approach it, if you see like a C major six, you'll see in that chord, we're gonna, instead of dealing with a C major seven, we're gonna, a C major six, let's just lay into major sevens, minor sevens for now. So right here, what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna start with Take the A Train. We'll come back to the screen share in a moment. The first chords that we have are C major seven to D seven, D minor seven, G seven, C major seven. So I'm gonna get up nice and close to the screen here so you can see what I'm doing. The first chord is the C major seven that we were talking about. I've got the bar on the third fret. Then I go to that kind of C form. That's what I'm just calling it for the D seven at the fifth fret. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and create another bar on the fifth fret for my minor seven, the D minor seven. So if this was the D seven, now what I want to do is the D minor seven. So I just create a bar here on the fifth fret, lay it, second finger on the second string on the sixth fret, third finger on the third string on the seventh fret. Okay, so far we've got C major seven, D seven, D minor seven, and now I'm gonna jump here to the G seven. The G seven, we're going back to the third fret, right? That's where we were for the C. The root here on the fifth string is, that's where the C is. I go down a string to the sixth string, and that is the, that's gonna be the root, our new root, which is G. So I create a bar again, second finger is on the third string on the fourth fret, third finger is on the fifth string on the fifth fret. Strumming all six strings. So first chord, C major seven, D seven, on the fifth fret. Stay on the fifth fret, D minor seven. Back to the G seven on the third fret. And then to back to our C major seven. So that's basically the A section. Let's go back. So I'll give you the screen share one more time. And then we'll just go briefly over the B section of the song. So I'm gonna play the chords. In this case, right, it says a C6. Right now I just wanna stay with a C major seven. Okay, so what I'm gonna do here, this is kind of brings us to the next point. Go with what you know in the beginning. So in this case, we've got a C major seven. Two bars, so that's eight counts. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Then I'm gonna go to my D7. Now you see a sharp 11. We don't even need to worry about the sharp 11 right now. Yes, we're going to get into that we'll talk more about the upper extensions, but right now we just need to cover the part. That's going to get us into some more abstract chord forms. So let's just play a straight D dominant because it'll work on this particular tune. So again, I'm going to that D7 for 8 counts. Whenever you see the minus sign here, okay, that's going to be a minor 7. If you don't see it indicated anywhere, just go ahead. It's implied that it's a major. So in this case, where it says C6, say C major 6, C major 7, right? In this case, D minor 7. So that's where we are here at the 5th fret. That's 4 counts on the D minor 7, 4 counts on the G7, and then back to the C major 7. When we get here, the last bar of the first ending, it's just a turnaround. These are 2-5, this is a 2-5-1, which we'll talk more about in the weeks come ahead. But for now, the turnaround is 2 counts on D minor 7. So you're going to have to move a little faster to the G7 and back to C major 7. If you can kind of get that movement down, it's movable. I can move that same. The beauty of the guitar, it's all about patterns, right? So check this out. As you're building your chord vocabulary, you also start to find patterns between progressions. So in this case, when I said, okay, I do D minor 7 to G7 to C major 7, we don't even have to think creatively. I'm just thinking mechanically in the sense that I can now play that same kind of pattern where I go minor, dominant 7, based on the ratio, right? It's three frets apart. I can play that anywhere on the guitar. As long as you're kind of within that 3-fret box, I'll give you a hint. The last chord that you land on, so in this case, D minor 7, G7 to C major 7, that last chord is going to determine kind of the tonal center of that tune. In this case, we're in the key of C, right? So if I do it right here, I land on this B flat major 7, lets me know I'm in the key of B flat. So you can move that around, just kind of practice playing that around the neck. So that's probably, I would say, that's probably the fastest you're going to have to move in that whole song as far as with chord transitions. Because if you look here, you've got, for the most part, you've got approximately 2 bars per chord, right? That's nice. You've got a little time to kind of like get your fingers in place, adjust the form if you need to. Then after 8 counts, you're on to the next chord. You're onto this D7. I jump down here. I've got a bar of D minor 7, a bar of G7, then a bar of C. And then I've got, this is where it gets probably the fastest you're going to have to move, D minor 7, G7 for the turnaround, and C6 or C major 7, you're back to that, okay? If you can't make the change, right, I always say, just get the 5 if you can. You know what I mean? If it's like, I can't switch that fast yet, it's okay. Just when you're at this C major 7 right here, remember we're playing the major 7. I've got 4 counts on C major 7, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then let's say I can't get this change here where I've got the D minor 7 to the G7 because it's moving too fast. I'm just gonna go 1, 2, 3, 4 and land on that G7. And that'll set you up for your turnaround back to the top. Okay, so we're just gonna move briefly here through the B section. Okay, that was the A section that we played, the verse. B section is the chorus, sometimes the bridge, depending. So in this case, you've got F major 7. Now, the beauty of this is, look at this. Nothing too crazy going on. We're primarily dealing with major 7s, minor 7s, and dominant 7s. We haven't even encountered like a minor 7 flat 5 like I was talking about earlier. So this, everything is really pretty straightforward, which is kind of the beauty of this tune. And so here, check this out. When I get to that F major 7, you're going to lay into it. You've got four bars, right? 16 counts on one chord in a standard arrangement. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you two shapes here. We can play an F major 7. This is where the root is on the sixth string, which is down in the first fret. What I do here, I create what I've got going on. I've got my first finger here. First finger is on the sixth string. Second finger is on the second string, both in the first fret. And then what I've got, these two fingers here, 3 and 4, are on the fourth and the third string stacked. I've got my fourth finger on the fourth string in the second fret. And then my pinky is on the, it's on the third string. I'm like getting turned around here. So it's on the third string here in the second fret. So there. First two fingers here are in the first fret. Second two fingers are in the second fret. These chord shapes are on the earlier lesson as well. So I can play it that way, or we can jump up here to the eighth fret, which is, remember, it's 1, 3, 5, 7, 8. And I can play it just the same way, that C major 7 that we were doing earlier. I can play my F major 7 the same way. Same exact shape. So I create the bar here on the eighth fret. I've got my fourth finger here on the fourth string in the 10th fret. Second finger is on the third string in the 9th fret. And then I've got my fourth finger here on the second string in the 10th fret. It's the same exact shape as that C major 7 that we were doing earlier. It's movable. I can literally walk down to the C major 7. So I've got my F major 7 right here, and I've got my F major 7 here at the 8th fret. Now, that kind of brings us back to our point of practicality and mobility. If I've been kind of hanging down in this region, then there's not really a reason for me to jump up here for now. Let's just keep everything down here. So there's one more way to approach this, and we'll talk about that in a second. So I'm going to play my F major 7 right here. And then I'm going to hang there for four bars. And then when I get to that D7, I'm just going to go back to the D7 that we were doing before. That's on the fifth fret. And then D minor 7, our chord that we just played. And then back to the G7. In this case, where you see this G7 flat 9, don't even worry about it right now. We don't need to get into any of the kind of altered tones. So when I play that, it sounds like this. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Back to the top. So the last thing that I was going to say is that when we're talking about voicings, right? Now, the only other thing that I would say to take into consideration, right, besides your kind of being practical, thinking about your movement, thinking about being creative with your voices, your voicings, is also the size and the instrumentation of the ensemble. So in this case, if I have, you know, a bass player, if I have a full, you're playing with a full rhythm section where you have piano, sometimes playing these kind of these thick voicings where we're down here at the first fret, right? I'm playing major sevens and dominant sevens that are down here at the low end of the neck where I'm picking up a lot of those lower tones. Sometimes it starts to get a little muddy if you're playing in a full ensemble. Even when you're playing in a combo setting, and especially if you have a piano and a bass player, sometimes you want to take, as guitar players, we need to realize that when it comes to the number of strings next to a piano, We're slightly outnumbered. Okay, so what we need to do is we want to go ahead and jump up. In this case, you can play that higher voicing. So where we were playing that F major 7 at the 8th fret. Okay, well now, if I've got that full ensemble, sometimes I need to kind of come out on the top of that. I need to cut through that. So I need to pick a voicing that is going to kind of slice through that in a certain way so that I can really add something to the ensemble rather than muddying it up. So if that's the case, then I'll play that and then I'll come back down to my D7, which isn't too hard of a transition. So that would look like this. F major 7 to D7 on the 5th fret. The F, remember, is on the 8th fret. D7, back to the D minor 7, and then you're back to the top, basically. The last 8 bars of the tune essentially is almost exactly identical to the beginning of the tune. All right, so the last thing we'll talk about, and as the weeks go on, we'll get more into how to be creative, how to start picking out voicings, how to really kind of start creating your own sound through the voicings that you are picking. But for now, remember to be practical. Just get the voice. We're just trying to cover the part. If something has a weird extension, play a chord that you do know that's going to get you close. Okay, play the C major 7. Major 7s and minor 7s, you're going to get a lot of mileage out of those. When we're talking about then we're talking about mobility. Try to keep yourself from having to jump up and down the neck. Keep everything tight and close so that you're not having to deal with the distance, okay? Third should actually be pay attention to the size and the instrumentation of the ensemble. Who are you playing with? If it's just you and a singer, then by all means, if you're accompanying somebody, you can go ahead and you actually want some of those because you want to fill out, kind of compensate for the lack of instrumentation. You want to get a nice full voicing to back up if it's you, if it's a singer or a sax player. But otherwise, maybe play something that's going to get you out above the bass player and the piano player. And then finally, your voicings, right? As you start to do it, start to think creatively and what can you contribute? What would sound nice? What, you know, start to develop your harmonic sense based off of your favorite artists. Figure out the people, listen to not just what they're soloing with, but find those players that also have a really unique or something about the harmony. There's so many. Stevie Wonder is a great one. He kind of rides that line between jazz and pop, but Stevie Wonder, the types of harmony that he uses in his song is so distinct that it's become so much a part of his sound. And you can develop that same idea in your own playing, okay? So we'll be getting to more of this, but right now, as you're building your chord vocabulary, these are the things to consider, and we'll be spending more time with this down the road.
Great session today, JJ. It was a really pleasure having you back, and we're looking forward to seeing you again next week. So next week we've got a rhythmic approach to jazz guitar, right?
Yep, that's it.
Yep. And then I'm certain that we'll get some other additional topics scheduled. If there are any specific requests for JJ, please email us at info@clearwaterjazz.com. And we'll put our heads together and get a session available for you. And JJ, it's been great, man. Any final words before we head out?
No, just right now, I think, like I said, we're laying kind of the groundwork. As soon as we kind of laid this foundation, we'll spend more time getting into kind of just the more detailed aspects of playing. But I just want people to know how to really kind of jazz can be daunting even when you've been playing it a while, and I hope that this at least starts to demystify some of that for some of those who are new to it. So
awesome.
Thank you for having me. Always.
Yes. We loved it. Please check out the studio at clearwaterjazz.com, brought to you by Blue Water Wealth Management at Steward Partners and Duke Energy, or the podcast Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions, brought to you by Marine Max. And everybody, keep playing out there, keep being creative, stay safe, and we'll see you back next time. Take care.
Next week, Steve. Peace, guys.
Thank you for listening to Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. Thank you to our friends at Marine Max Clearwater for helping to present this podcast series. To learn more about the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Annual Festival tradition, other special events throughout the year, and our year-round education and outreach, please visit clearwaterjazz.com.